With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time. We have the people.
This is Eric from Moana.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Tim Jensen with Pepperdine Volleyball.
The story in real time.
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
I'm not retiring, people.
You're listening to The Net Line with Barney.
I dominated.
Peter.
We're into that because we're horny for volleyball.
Reed.
Swear's pretty. You promised me he'd be on the show today.
And DJ Rouché.
The baddest DJ in the land.
It's The Net Live right now.
I'm waiting for the last hit, and there's no last hit.
That's it. There you go.
There you go. I was waiting for some sort of drum.
So you're waiting for the crowd to simmer down a little bit.
That's right. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Net Live. It is Monday, the 19th of March, 2012. Kevin Barnett, your intrepid host, once again back in the studio, ready for another big show, joined, of course, by DJ Rouché, Jeremy Rouché. ValaEntertainment.com, if you're wondering where you can go, if you want to hire Mr. Rouché for your next gig,
right.
Your next party, his gig, I guess. So it's Jeremy and I holding down the home court. We're expecting to hear from one Reed Pretty, who got a little thing called a medal yesterday.
He had a
very big weekend. We'll have more on that when he calls in. Expecting to hear from Brandon Rosenthal, our old friend. Come on, give us some business about this or that. And we are not expecting to hear from Chris McGee.
League in us today.
He's probably out.
Spring training.
Having breakfast spring training with somebody from the Angels. Maybe he and Pujols just, you know, becoming best pals.
Taking batting practice together.
Yeah.
Geeter.
Pumping him in there at about.
Pop fly to the pitcher.
Geeter winding his arm out at 45 miles an hour. Helping Albert work on his stroke. No, Albert, a little flatter. Bring your hips around.
Yeah.
So McGee undoubtedly having a good time down there at spring training in Arizona. I think he's on his way there right now, as a matter of fact. I believe he's in transit.
Private jet?
No, he works for Fox. He doesn't get to give you on the private jets with the Angels.
Just curious.
I don't know. Would you fly in a private jet? If you had the money, would you do the private jet thing?
If I had the money? Yeah, why not?
That's a safety thing.
What's your point?
I don't like small planes. That's my point.
Well, you probably wouldn't fit on them.
Well, yeah, that aside, I've sat in some pretty small planes. We used to fly in a little 16-seater when I played for my Italian club in A1, and it was very convenient because we were going from Macerata or Ancona on the eastern side of Italy onto Almeria, Spain. So a normal day would have been drive 45 minutes to Ancona, fly to Rome for an hour or 40 minutes or whatever, then Rome to Barcelona for 2.5 hours, and then Barcelona to Almeria for an hour, and all told probably 10 hours or 12 hours of transit. Well, we drove to Ancona. We jumped on the 16-seater plane. 2.5 hours later, we landed in Almeria. That was better, but still a little sketchy. We took the same plane to Friedrichshafen, and it was kind of iced over, and ice was coming off the wings.
Never a good sign.
Or, pardon me, off the nose, and
yep.
Going through the props, which doesn't sound good when you're in the plane.
Well, a 16-seater, and probably all those seats were full, I would assume,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, and all the gear in the back.
Yeah, when I'm thinking private jet, it's not as full.
It's not even a private jet at that point. It's private.
It's a charter.
Yeah, and it's got the two normal engines on either side. Private prop plane.
Yeah, you guys are out there pushing it down the runway.
Right, and it's one of those where it takes off, to go down the, like, it's like a giant RC aircraft, down the runway. And then when you take off, the as you pull like almost straight up in the thing.
Well, the NBA guys have like the jets, like they're not.
Yeah. Well, they're big time.
Well, yeah.
But still, you think of Payne Stewart. You think of other private jets going down with executives from. I think In-N-Out had an issue with some executives. There's always 3, 4, or 5 plane crashes a year, and I wonder what the data is compared to if you flew commercial. Because commercial first class is still probably cheaper than renting your own jet.
Oh, for sure.
But you have to deal with that. So I'm not sure if I would do it all the time.
If you had to deal with TSA all the time.
Oh, God. TSA. Don't get me started. Let's bring into the show an old friend. He's a little bit. He'd be on a private jet if he had the money. But instead, he's a head volleyball coach at Lipscomb University, so he's still working on the bankroll necessary. Brandon Rosenthal, welcome back.
What's up, boys?
It's the fifth man of the year last year, and now apparently
I'm off to a slow start. I really am. Early vote goes to Matt Boyce.
We don't
expect
to campaign constantly. We expect you to be in that seat for a little while before you start campaigning.
Okay. I gotcha. How are you guys?
We're good. We're good. It's not windy today. It was incredibly windy yesterday here, 50 degrees and 40-50 mile an hour winds, which was a lot of fun for everybody, including the flag football.
Hey, so when I lived there, anytime the wind started to kick up, everybody just blames it on the Santa Anas. Is that how it still rolls out there?
No, this was a coastal thing coming in. This wasn't Santa Ana. This was
coastal eddies.
Coastal eddies, yeah. This was coming off a storm. We had some pretty good rain, actually most rain we've had all year, but that's enough for the weather report from Southern California.
Nice. Geeter, how are you, brother?
Who?
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. That's I texted him earlier this week. I had a little recruiting question. No love back. No love.
Nothing.
He's big time.
Well, yeah, and then finally he got back to me and it was like, oh gosh, I'm so sorry, D Fish, and you know, he was going on to that, and
I was at D Fish's going away party, is that what he said?
I don't know if he was there for that, but
the hasty
man,
his departure of D Fish and Luke Walton. He was over at Luke Walton's house crying into some Chardonnay.
And then they were going out to play a little beach volley after.
Yeah, they're gonna go out and call
after. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We're changing it here, Jeremy. It's next set. I got next set.
Yeah, you guys want to go down to the beach? I got next set.
You're going to play a few sets.
You would get smacked in the face.
I don't go to the beach. We're going to talk about that later, the cool guy Southern California thing while Heater's not here.
Yep.
He would fit into that, I think.
Yeah, and you know what I'm talking about. You've lived here, Brandon. You know who those guys are.
I mean, Geeter wears Uggs. Come on. I mean, he's not even there to argue against it now. So, I mean, nothing wrong with that.
Brandon Rosenthal, I'm glad you're back on the show because I know you guys have been in spring practice. Give us an idea what's going on with your program and probably most of the programs around NCAA women this time of year.
Sure. Well, January and February is kind of it's an interesting time. I think all programs kind of handle it a little differently, but basically you're kind of limited to 8 total hours a week. You go from 20 total hours to 8 total hours, and of those 8, only 2 per individual can be volleyball. So however you want to break that up, in half-hour sessions, hour sessions, if you want to do one team practice for 2 hours. So it gets a little interesting because our days get really taken away, mostly in individual sessions, because you're handling it in half-hour sessions, like I said. So, but usually beginning of March kind of breaks back into our what we call our spring season, full spring season, and you go back to your full team practices. It's interesting. I think in my early years of coaching, really was just like, hey, spring's going to make and break us. And I do think spring is important. I think you get some good stuff done. But at the same time, I think a little rest mentally and physically is also great for the girls.
Okay, good. Yeah,
it's hard because – I mean, August, it's a long time away, when we're getting after it in the gym, there's definitely, hey, we're working to get better, but, there's 8 months before we really get after it.
Yeah, it's a while, and I think it's so odd about your season. Having been a men's player where you play in through the fall, and then you have Christmas break, and you come back and do a little couple preseason things, and you're ready to go. It just seems to make more sense, and we've talked about that, the idea of changing in a season. We've gone through that whole discussion, but it is an odd thing, especially when you have athletes that are finished. You have athletes who are done, who in some cases are still in the gym, some cases not, and it's got to be an interesting battle to deal with those athletes and you wanting their participation perhaps for numbers or just to make it equal on both sides so you can run more drills, but at the same time, with different individuals leaving your program, you may or may not want them in the gym.
Certainly. And you're seeing, especially with women's volleyball, you're seeing a little bit more of a push for girls to come in they're basically their second semester of their senior year of high school and get started then. And it, you know, it makes sense. I mean, then, you know, they're done after December and it, you know, it just works. So, it's kind of interesting, you know, the recruiting model and everything you see with that, more and more probably bigger schools are having the girls come there early.
Yeah, it makes sense, except for the fact you're missing senior prank day and the powder puff football game and whatever else going on your senior year of high school, that kind of fun finish with all your friends and graduation and everything else because you're already into college.
Yeah, that's my theory. You know, I've always said, hey, if this is where you want to be and we're able to do it, then great. If not, I'm never going to force it because, you know, I don't want you half in, half out. And I think, you know, that homesickness really, really becomes more and more of an issue at that point.
Yeah, because you have unfinished business back with your high school friends and your life and your parents and everybody else. And you sort of feel like that anyway when you finish high school, a lot of kids that then leave for college and feel a little homesick. But it's got to exacerbate it when you know everyone's back there still having fun.
No doubt. I mean, having Project X kind of, you know, parties and everything like that. Did you see that movie? I have not. I still got to see that.
Project X.
No, that's a DVD rental for me. I don't need to see it in the theater.
Good call. Redbox.
Yeah. Not saying that it's not good and entertaining, but visually I don't need to see it in the theater.
No doubt. I gotcha. I gotcha.
So I was tooling around this morning on Volley Talk and picked up somebody putting up the Anteater TV commercial here. It's a little of the audio coming off this...
I don't know if the bass sounds good on people's computers, but my headphones is just rocking.
It's good. They're going to bounce on the ball. Kevin Tilley in there. I'm not sure why they have some baseball calls in there, why that choice, but they got the Exmo. They got the slow-mo out. They're going, I don't know, 1,000 frames per second, it appears. It looks pretty cool. They're doing some neat stuff here. And I'm not sure if the team has done it. Somebody said, yeah, that was kind of weird, is one of the comments. Well, it's a little out there. You know, showing the hands, making the call, guys going to the net, the interplay with the setter and the hitters to a nice bass beat.
Just on sub-bass, just rattling in the background.
Bring as many of these stories to you as we can.
So anyway, that's up there on Volley Talk. It's under UCI commercial. And the reason I wanted to throw this out here, especially with Brandon here, is this is something that really 10, 15 years ago, when I was in college, you couldn't produce this stuff. It wasn't possible as far as the athletes or your athletes' friends or students, really. It took a massive amount of equipment to do. Today, you can produce a pretty slick-looking video with a handful of people, one camera, and a Macintosh. And all of a sudden, you can produce something that's pretty fun to watch and a good promotional item for your team. And I've seen this with a high school video from local Palos Verdes Peninsula High School. They did a video that I got to look it up here. I think it has something like 15 million views. It caught on the Huffington Post. Pretty awesome. They had the whole school involved promoting their high school because in Palos Verdes you can choose. You can go to one high school or the other. There's two of them. And they were recruiting. They're basically recruiting against each other.
Interesting.
So it was a recruitment video for eighth graders. And they've had massive enrollment there at that school because they had enrollment declining.
Yeah.
So now they have massive enrollment for this year based on that video. My question to you, Brandon, is I know you guys do some Facebook videos and stuff like that. How do you control your brand or how much do you utilize this and how much do you like the availability of this kind of media?
Yeah, you know, I think the best thing you said there is controlling your brand. And I think we really do have the capabilities now to do that with Facebook and YouTube and, you know, Twitter and everything like that. You know, a couple of years ago, we made the decision that, you know, we were going to really push Facebook. And not only Facebook, we hired one of our student videographers. And he basically, you know, he travels with us, you know, all year long. And his job is to produce a promotional video, before every match, and it's kind of twofold. It's one for the fans to get to see, you know, some great video work, and the other thing is we show it to the girls right before we run out, and it's been huge. And, you know, the girls love it. I love it, but more so than that, I just didn't realize how many people were watching the videos and checking the Facebook page, and it's neat to see. Our guy Ryan Daly does some fantastic work. I was just looking, so there's, gosh, probably 35 videos, you know, on our Facebook page just about the season and, you know, just some fun stuff. So what's neat is recruiting-wise, you're able to kind of point this out and, you know, the girls get a really good feel for what your program's all about. Not just playing-wise, but, you know, the fun stuff and, you know, kind of that extra stuff that we've talked about before, you know, about going to a, you know, program X or whatever it is that sets them apart.
So this is a good recruiting tool for you.
I think it's unbelievable. I think video, you know, these short videos anywhere from a minute and a half to 3 minutes is this generation. And YouTube, Facebook, this is where they're comfortable. And so when you're talking to girls that are sophomores and juniors in high school, this is really kind of a venue that they can go to without feeling, you know, really intimidated by.
How long till the NCAA cracks down on that?
Oh, man.
How long till they say, much like they said, you couldn't have the guy's name up on the Jumbotron with the radio guy making the call or the TV guy making the call about a touchdown run? How long till the NCAA cracks down on the ability to have?
Probably 2 years, when you put it like that. Literally, I mean, once football and basketball kind of get into it, and I'm sure they already are, but, you know, it makes it tough for everybody, you know, because I think it is such a good thing. And I think it's one of those deals where, I mean, how do you control, I don't know, social media today is unbelievable. I don't know how you control Facebook, you know, and I'm not sure Zuckerberg wants that to happen.
The only way you do that is when the kids sign their scholarship deals, you have that in the contract that they can't, you know, you have to put in guidelines for what they can and can't do. I mean, these kids, I realize
today, this is before. I mean, this is people producing stuff as part of a recruiting package that when the kid shows up.
Oh, you know, gotcha.
Remember Johnny B. Goode, he goes in the stadium and they got the...
I mean, kids today, it's all visual. It's like, how can you not...
it's the NCAA. Nobody should have an advantage. Nobody should be able to play with a kid's psyche.
You're telling me Duke doesn't have an advantage when recruiting for basketball compared to other schools just because they're Duke? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's going to happen. How can you even the playing field?
No, I love that. His comment, you know, DJ Rocher's comment is just as simple as that. It's, you know, there's always going to be an advantage for somebody. And you know, that's just the way it is. So quit trying to fight it.
Tell him back off.
Just back off.
Settle down now. Sounds like
I can see Barnett on his soapbox telling the NCAA, hey, go away.
You don't have to see it. You can hear it about 10 shows back when they were getting lambasted. Right before the whole Sandusky thing broke, the NCAA was on the ropes, getting punched in the gut, then getting the face worked. They were done. And the Sandusky thing broke and saved them. I mean, literally saved them from what really could have been huge pressure for actual reform. And now all that news cycle, all that attention has kind of gone away, unfortunately. And we're back to the same old thing. Matter of fact, I watched ESPN 30 for 30 this past weekend while in Indianapolis for Supercross. And
Magic?
Huh? No, it wasn't Magic. I missed that one. I wanted to see that one badly.
I'm surprised Geeter hasn't talked about the announcement. That was awesome.
This was the one about Fab Five. Fab Five.
Yep.
And talking about the money that Chris Webber took or didn't take, and that Mitch Albom, I think, from ESPN, who's in the video. They feature him, sports writer, who is walking with Chris Webber. He did a lot of stuff on Chris Webber at that time. I think he worked for the Detroit Free Press and maybe still does.
Yeah, that's where he's out of.
Okay, so Detroit Free Press, and he was walking with Chris Webber, and Weber had just asked him for a couple of bucks to get a pizza or something. And they walked by a store, and there's Chris Weber's number 4 jersey with in the window for $75. And you know they're selling like hotcakes. And he turns to Mitch Albom and he says, look, I don't have money for food, and these guys are selling this for $75.
Yep.
There you go. That's all you need to know about the NCAA and what the schools and everybody else are doing. And we've gotten into it on the program. We're not going to go off on a half-hour tirade here, as much fun as that would be for me. But that right there is the problem. You walk into a student bookstore, said this before, Colt McCoy, Jordan Shipley, whoever's the quarterback right now at Texas. You walk into that Texas store, they're all over the place. Chris Weber jerseys. Who's hot in the tournament right now? Not following college basketball at all. Kentucky jerseys. Don't tell me there aren't the top 3 players' jerseys in the bookstore selling like hotcakes.
Oh, yeah.
On the internet, selling like hotcakes. And the players get exactly zero of that money. And for the top players, believe me, that more than pays their scholarship just in jersey sales. Forget ticket sales, concessions, and everything else. So Mitch's point on the show was, how could you fault him for taking money just for basic necessities?
Yeah.
And he's alleged to have taken more. But as Albom says towards the end of that 30 for 30, which is excellent, he says if that kid was taking $200,000 to $300,000, which is the alleged amount that he took during college, said, I don't know where it went. And I don't know a single 20-year-old kid who was given that kind of money that wouldn't flaunt it in some way. He said, look, I was around a lot, and you never saw it. You didn't see it in his car. You didn't see it in what he did. You didn't see it in stuff he had.
Yeah,
where was that money?
Was he investing at 19 years old?
Where was that money going? And really, it's a sad state of affairs because these kids come from disadvantaged circumstances where so many football players and basketball players do, poor economic backgrounds, to the point where it's not like I want to take money in and buy a car for my mom. No, it's I don't have shoes to come and practice today. I don't have shoes that fit.
And now some of these kids, they are getting a certain amount of money per month, right, for food and stuff like that when they're on scholarship because they can't get a job because they don't have time.
Right, but I'm even gone back to the high school now, the high school level for a lot of these kids when they are all-stars.
Yeah.
And some of these guys like Ed Martin, who is the booster, the guy who was alleged to have been involved with Chris Weber and Juwan Howard and that whole Fab Five crew,
yeah,
that he was supporting them and their high school team. And the point that I think it's Jalen Rose that makes, he makes the point that, look, man, in high school – they didn't just give stuff to the star players. They supported our whole team. This guy, Ed Martin, supported our whole team.
Yeah.
When people didn't have shoes, because literally it was that way for these kids in Detroit in that time. It's still that way for some kids. So, look, he bought shoes. He made sure people had shoes or had clothes or got a meal before or after a game because he liked the program. He was supporting the kids, not just the star players. Now, it went beyond that with some of the star players.
Of course.
But those kinds of people, while committing NCAA, quote, violations with these kids in high school, are necessary for a lot of these kids, even just to have the basics to play. So we're kind of off on a tangent in a couple different places with that discussion, but the bottom line is reform needs to happen, and I don't think it's going to happen because I think the news cycle has gone away and the NCAA isn't going to feel the pressure, and they're going to keep looking out for themselves in this March Madness tournament that's on now, and they're $700 million this year alone.
The thing that gets me is that when you were in college or Reed was in college, if there was a video game and the player looked exactly like you and that company was making millions of dollars and you weren't getting anything, even today.
That's the Ed O'Bannon suit that's going
on
now. Yeah, Oscar Robertson in that suit.
That's what
Oscar Robertson, yeah.
That EA Sports has nothing to do with college. If the college is selling your jersey, I can see them saying, you know, we're benefiting from you because we're paying for your school. Fine, I can do that argument. But when an outside company is making billions of money off of you,
right,
that's when it bothers me.
Right. Well, bothers a lot of people, but as detailed in the Atlantic Monthly, the NCAA really doesn't have any sort of mandate.
Well,
there's sort of an illegitimate thing that came about for an advantage in football and has morphed into this thing that the only reason it even has power at all is because university presidents buy into the idea.
Well, and you also signed a lot of your rights away when you signed up for your scholarship as well.
You do, and that's a contract, and you do sign that. That's a good point, but there are no other options.
No, I agree. I'm just saying that, like, that's there, so somebody's got to change the rules.
Brandon Rosenthal, you just sent me a note that might take us a different direction here, since we are a sports program, not just volleyball.
I did, and I figured you would have had all the ESPN channels on right now to watch Peyton watch, because my man is heading to Denver, it seems. Which is sad news coming from a Tennessee Titan fan here.
That's confirmed right now?
Are they
how do we confirm?
I mean,
anymore?
I saw that he was talking to them, but, like, I mean, I'm into that. I'm okay with that.
You know, watching another 30 for 30, I was watching the J1 a few weeks ago.
Great one.
Another good one. But it has no narration. It's all just clips from the time. And they have a lot of the clips of the white van driving. And as I was leaving town on Friday for Indianapolis, it was ESPN following the van where Peyton was going to North Carolina to throw for Denver. ESPN, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I saw your little rant on Facebook.
Oh,
gosh, it was embarrassing. Totally embarrassing. Even the anchors on ESPN could not keep it together about how embarrassing and worthless that coverage was. They were mocking themselves.
ESPN is the biggest sports conglomerate in the world, right? So
sure.
Even if somebody else breaks the story, you're going to get it from ESPN anyways. So they don't need to be the ones in the black helicopters that are silent, that, you know, with the night vision goggles, you know, looking for Peyton. It's going to come out. They're going to be the first to know.
And they're not breaking news there. They're just making it. They're manufacturing it out of nothing.
Gardhoff just said John Elway is Tebowing right now.
I said to my friend who is a big Denver fan, Josh Crozier, I said, look, maybe I put it on the Facebook too about ESPN. ESPN now should be called the Denver Broncos Network.
No.
Because they covered Tebow so much, they covered Peyton so much. With those two there, they're not going to show anything else.
They're at Tebow's house right now.
Just change it to the Denver Broncos Television Network. That's what it ought to be.
It's awesome.
We've had good interaction on the Facebook page this week. We appreciate the notes that are out there. We've gotten several notes about wanting to know more information about beach volleyball. To that end, we're going to have Todd Goronsky on the program today. We're going to talk to him about some of the things that are going on with beach. We're also going to talk to him about Volley America and Rich Hiles. I think I'm saying his name right, H-E-I-L-E-S. Those two will be on the show later this morning. Reed Pretty is expected to join us at some point here and talk to us about Champions League. And I think he's there right now, matter of fact.
What's up, fellas?
Yeah. Reed Pretty, how are you? Should we refer to you as Champion Reed Pretty? Mr. Champion Reed Pretty? King of Europe Reed Pretty? What is your official title now that your Kazan team has taken Champions League?
I think you're just a Champions League title holder. I think that's it. Nothing special.
Lord?
My role was, wasn't king-like in any sense, but I was happy to contribute. And, man, there was some really, really good volleyball this weekend in an environment that was just off the hook. And it was really, really special to be a part of.
Reed, I heard you had to battle some questionable officiating. Is that correct?
Oh, my gosh, Jeremy. The stuff that the Polish fans are writing me and the way that they acted during the awards ceremony was ridiculous. The final call was a little anticlimactic because they felt they got a touch. I still haven't seen the replay, but from all reports, that there was probably a touch and a mistake made. And that's unfortunate. But be that as it may, I don't know what they expect from us. I mean, what do we replay it? I mean, the guy made a call. And I'm not quite sure what they expect from us. As if people are writing me that we're scammers, that we cheated, and I just encourage them to watch the match and take note at the various calls that were made that were wrong, and then went the other way. And my dad had a great comment. He said, you know, our team made 7 unforced errors in the final set. They had 2 match points between set 4 and 5. They couldn't close it out. They have nobody to blame but themselves, according to my dad, who's a volleyball insider. So, it was unfortunate to end that way, but fortunate for us, I guess.
Reed, I love how you just dropped your dad as the technical advisor right there.
Yeah, he's come around, man. He knows his volleyball. I'm not saying that jokingly at this point. He's definitely logged the hours of volleyball. So,
is he right up there with Tom Hofstad? Because Tom Hofstad once suggested that when the other guy hit it, you should just hit it right back. You should go spike to spike. Did your dad ever come up with any sweet advice like that?
Oh, I remember the spike to spike. That was hilarious. You know, on a serious note, somebody asked me, this was just dinner time conversation in the last couple of months, what was the best present I ever received? And in thinking for a while, the best present I ever received was right after the 04 games, Kevin. If you remember, we lost the heartbreaker to Russia. And, you know, maybe a day or two later, my dad just wrote me an email that was super long and in-depth and just right on the mark about volleyball. And up to that point, he never played volleyball. He was a basketball, baseball player, and up to that point was just sort of a supporter. But that really, him kind of giving me the complete recap, and it was right on from every angle. It was something only an insider, I think, would kind of know. It really showed me that he wasn't just watching and supporting, but he's been paying attention, and that really was special to me. So, yeah, I call him my volleyball insider.
Ken Pretty. Those of you looking for advice on how to play volleyball or what went on with Champions League, Ken Pretty, do we have a number for him?
No, not at this point.
I think we just lost Brandon Rosenthal.
He couldn't take it anymore.
You know, we switched to international volleyball. It wasn't no longer about college.
He is confused.
Or Peyton Manning. We lost him. I hope he comes back because I wanted to ask him about some of the ASC issues that we detailed last week. But let's not lose our time with Reed Pretty here. Reed, give us an idea of when things are finishing up, because the news here from USAV has been that the training block has started. Guys like Stanley and Lamborn, Gardner already in the gym. We know that a lot of you guys are in playoffs. Now Champions League is complete. We know you have been in playoffs. I think you've gone to the semifinal of the Russian League Championship, if I'm not correct. And what does your calendar look like leading into the much ballyhooed Norseca Championships that start May 7th?
We start right away, so we have a couple days break here. Tonight we're going to go celebrate Max Mihailov's birthday, and we start up against Novosibirsk in the semifinal best of five series starting Saturday, Sunday at our place, and then we go to their place the following weekend. I think maybe there's a 3 or 4 day break between the pairings of matches. So hopefully we'll be done, you know, by mid-April, and if it was anything like last year, we were able to win the championship, and I was given permission literally to be on a plane back home within 24 hours. So that's sort of the similar goal this year, to just get back in the U.S. as possible. It was great to connect this weekend. If you saw Kevin Hansen play with his team Arcas in the semifinal and the bronze medal match, he looks to be in great form, fresh, and just playing really good all-around volleyball. I was very, very happy to see him and see him playing so well.
Yeah, that's good news. That setting position, that's the big question going into this year. And I was wondering aloud last week if Donald Sujo doesn't somehow figure back in the equation this upcoming season. He's playing pretty well, it appears, for Sicily.
Yeah, I've heard the same. Before I take off, I don't know if you guys touched base at all on the challenge system that was used this last weekend. Did you guys have any exposure to that?
No. Fill us in.
Basically, it was the same sort of eagle eye system. I don't know if it was the exact system, but it was a system they've been using in the Polish league, and they've got, you're allowed to challenge calls. As long as they're line calls or, and you're allowed to challenge as many times as you can get it right. However, two challenges that you're wrong in, then you lose the ability to challenge anymore. And I'm telling you guys, it was a breath of fresh air, especially playing an Italian team where they spend more time working the refs and making it this big show than actually playing the game. It makes everyone be honest, because you can't lie to your teammates or your coach, because if you do that, they're going to look at the high-definition replay, and you're going to be wrong, and you're going to cost your team a challenge opportunity. And it just created this total, emotional balance, and players were just able to play. Now, of course, these touch calls, they haven't implemented that yet, but, man, it was awesome to see technology come into the game of volleyball and be used to make the game more fair.
Now, who can challenge, like anybody or like
yeah, is there a challenge
captain?
Flag?
Like, is it the coach?
And what can you challenge? Can you challenge touch calls to the net or just line calls?
It was line calls. So any line call, so whether or not you're under the net, you're over the 10-foot line, or a ball in or out, or a net touch, but no ball touches could be disputed. I'm not sure what the reasoning is for that, because that would be the next step, of course, but maybe because they feel like they have four professional line judges plus a down ref and an up ref. Maybe they bank on getting that call right, which I mean, the ball's traveling so fast. It's hard to get that one right all the time. But basically, it's the captain is the only guy that can challenge. And he goes to the ref and says, challenge. The ref has a certain hand signal, and the down ref goes right away to the special table that has all these various screens with various angles. And it was really fast. It wasn't a huge pause. We're talking maybe 30, 45 seconds. They come and make the ruling, and everyone moves on. It's tough to argue with that, you know? It's great.
Awesome.
I'm glad to hear
more of that.
That's happening. We were talking about that with the whole college issue and asking if that would be something a college could use, and wondering if they can't come up with money for headsets, how could they come up with money for this system? But I'm glad to see somebody putting it in. I wouldn't mind seeing it internationally. I'd like to see it in the – and maybe Champions League is a laboratory for that. We know that.
Do they have any replay in the Olympics at all?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Interesting.
Just on the line calls, and there are some controversial ones. Hey, on the Facebook page, you've got a couple of things up there. We have the UCI video that we mentioned that was produced for the UCI men's volleyball team. You can check that out. And also the high school video that I mentioned is up there. And I'm going to click on it here, hopefully get it done before it starts up.
Oh, boy.
But the amount of views that something like this can generate is something that our sport could use. I can't see it here how many views there are, but it has in the millions of views. And I'd like to see something like the UC Irvine ad get millions of views. I think it's going to be a little bit different, but I like that people are out there doing that sort of stuff. And Reed, do you see that with your professional clubs? Do you have super fans that are putting together videos and tributes and stuff for your team or you personally?
I think the more access you provide, the better. Our team does a good job of not really in English, so we don't get a lot of exposure to it. But in terms of the access and the press conferences, and we live stream every single home match. There's getting to be a lot more exposure to the team, and guys are regularly interviewed in Russian, and so there's a lot of access, and I think that's a real positive thing for supporters to be drawn closer to the team.
Very good. DJ Roche?
Yeah, buddy.
Let's take a little break.
All righty.
A couple minutes. We'll recompose our thoughts. We've got a lot more to come here. The ABCA College of Volleyball Weekly still coming. We'll talk about the ASC issues, kind of the issues of charges around the juniors community. Let's see if we get Brandon Rosenthal back for that for just a couple of minutes. He spends a lot of time at those events. Talk about, will Misty and Carrie win? What do you think? Will Misty and Carrie take home the gold this summer in London?
Three-peat.
Would be the third one. Talk about that. Talk about USAV and their upcoming event as always. And somebody put up a pretty funny thing on our Facebook page, hoping to make it to the Norseca event to avoid the Barnett beatdown. Threat of personal violence still out there if this is not a sold-out event. Talk about the barbecue that's in the works there. More information coming on that. This is the Net Live brought to you by the Spire Institute. Check them out, spireinstitute.org. Fantastic support for this program. We appreciate you being here. It's the Net Live on a Monday. Kevin, DJ Roche, and Reed Pretty live from Russia. Back in just a moment. You don't have to find the best college coaches. They find you at Spire Institute. Spire's postgraduate volleyball academy wants athletes. Spire delivers customized volleyball training and competition, led by head coach John Hawks, athletic development with Michael Johnson Performance, and educational options, all in Olympic-grade facilities. There is no better way to impress college coaches and increase scholarship opportunities. Spire Institute, postgraduate men's and women's programs in multiple sports. It's not taking a year off, it's adding a year to your future. Sign up today at spireinstitute.org.
The 2012 ABCA Spring Conference, now in its fifth year, is scheduled for May 3rd through 5th on the campus of the University of Southern California and the Radisson at USC. This year's event will be held in conjunction with the NCAA Men's Volleyball Division 1-2 National Championship. Just a few of the speakers attending will be Karch Karai and three of the final four coaches of the 2011 Division 1 NCAA Tournament. For more information and to register today, go to abca.org. See
you in LA. Welcome back to the Net Live, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Barnett opening a FedEx package.
That's right.
So I will let you guys know that the Net Live tees are still available at valaclothing.com. should check those out. I'm wearing one right now, actually, Kevin, my aqua blue NetLive shirt. It's very comfortable. And it's a unisex shirt, Kevin. Men and women can wear it.
They will look equally attractive.
Yeah. So I think all proceeds benefit the show. They don't go straight into my pocket.
Even though you wish they would.
But yeah, well, obviously.
No, it is. Get out there, valaclothing.com, valaclothing.com, and support this program and the entertainment, or lack thereof, that we bring you each week. Sometimes we have information, sometimes we have entertainment, sometimes we have neither, and sometimes we break news to you volley dorks about the NFL. And in that vein, Peyton Manning apparently signing with the Denver Broncos, and ESPN announcing a name change to DBN, that is the Denver Broncos Network. So lots happening in the world of sports. I look forward to tuning into DBN this afternoon when they have PTI. See how many more acronyms we can use. We start talking about volleyball, same problem. FIVB, AVP, NVL, USAV, FIVB,
I'm getting a headache.
USOC.
Headache just thinking about it.
We should have an acronym contest and just put up a list of like 50 and see how many people can actually name. Although we'd have to do it live so they're not looking on the internet. It's just too easy. I wanted to throw this question out there for you, Jeremy. You and I were chatting a little bit earlier talking about, will Misty and Carey win a third gold? What do you think their chances are?
I think it's pretty high, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously, there's a little luck involved, and I think anybody who wins championships, tournaments, will say that there's always a little luck involved on the way, but they stay healthy. I mean, they are the best women's team we have, for sure. Now, with that being said, I truly believe that Jen and April could win the gold as well. They haven't qualified as of yet,
right?
But most likely they will. But I truly believe they are good enough to win the gold medal. But I think percentage-wise, Carey and Misty have the best chance. They know each other the best. This is their third. My question is does going for three, does that add more pressure? Or because you've won two already, there's not as much pressure? I mean, they still have stuff to prove. They both
they do?
Misty coming off injury.
Okay.
Both of them older. People are like, oh, can you do it when you're older? Carrie's had two kids. So, you know, they still have drive, you know.
I think it gets easier as you get older.
Okay.
I think that the volleyball court or the football field or the racetrack or whatever it happens to be for you as a professional becomes your refuge from the busy life of family life when you have a couple of kids. I actually asked this question of Kevin Windham this week, rider who's been riding 18 years on the AMA Supercross Series, which is ridiculous, by the way. The average rider career is just probably 5 years, something like that, 4 years. And he has four kids. And I asked him that question, are you more focused when you come to the races now, even though you're busier during the week and you're busier when you are here with media and everything else, but are you more focused just because you're more relaxed and it's kind of time away from something that's even busier, which is your family? And he said, yeah, this definitely has escaped. And I felt that in my own life. I became much more efficient and much more relaxed mentally at practice when that wasn't the most important part of my day.
I bet you appreciated it more, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's funny how when you take your sport that's supposed to be, quote, your focus, your life, your drive, your profession, your everything to make the Olympics, right? And when you make that second to perhaps a wife or even third, when you're talking about a wife and family, I think it actually makes it better. I think it makes it easier.
Well, now
it takes the edge off.
You're sharing it with more people, too. Before, it was just you, probably. Multiple
True.
Times, you're sharing it with more people.
You are, but you're not sharing any of the duties. The duties are the same.
True.
I think your mental approach becomes better. I think that it becomes a refuge from the busyness of those relationships. People needing diapers changed or food. Or maybe they're hungry and they need food. It's all about food with children.
Did it make you focus more because your time in the gym or your time to focus on volleyball was less because you had other things going on? So then when you had to focus on it, it was 100% that. Does that make sense?
It's an interesting concept. I have to think about that.
Like when Carey and Misty, when they're on the beach, like we have to focus right now because as soon as I step off the beach, Carey,
it's over.
I have two kids I need to take care of. Like my day is now their day. It's not my day anymore.
Right.
So you're putting more into it when you're out there training, when you're out there, you know, lifting weights, doing whatever it is you need to do to get ready.
Because you know you can't put it off.
Absolutely.
At least the focus and the attention anyway.
Yeah.
That's an interesting theory. I like that. I like that.
I mean, I think the rest of the world, at least internationally, has gotten a little better on the women's side, for sure. So it's not like Karen Misty can just walk through easily. It's not a given that they're going to get the gold. I mean, I don't think anything is a given. But I do think they have the best chance, for sure.
Everybody wants to ask them about pressure, the pressure of winning three. I don't think they're going to feel that pressure. They've already done it twice. It becomes easier each time, not harder, play in those finals, play in those quarterfinals. It's a much simpler proposition. My second time at the Olympics, who cares? The tournament we're playing, yeah, there's not as much added pressure and outside influence to that environment.
I will say this, being around beach volleyball for all those years when Karen and Misty were making the run for both Olympics, anytime they lost a match, it wasn't complete panic, but like word would spread like, oh, what's wrong with them? What happened? It's like, you know what? They lost lost to another good team. That's what happened. There's nothing wrong with them. But that's
love the expectation is that high.
Because it's like they are expected to win every single match all the time, which I always like throwing this stat out. I can't remember what year it was, but Carrie and Misty had won close to 80% of the tournaments they had ever entered together.
Okay, ever.
Tiger Woods, this was before his getting hit in the head with a golf club incident.
Right.
Had only won 20-some-odd percent of all the tournaments he entered. And he's considered top golfer, arguably top golfer of all time.
Certainly in that era.
Yeah.
The way he dominated that
and the
time.
Publicity
no one
that
had
he gets,
ever done that.
Publicity that he gets, all that stuff. Karen Misty, 80%, Kevin. I don't do anything at
80%. 80%. Yeah, that, what they have, 109?
103 in a row,
103,
I think,
yeah, 109
like
maybe it was Penn State. 103.
I don't care.
Unimaginable.
I don't care if you're playing Little Sisters of the Poor 12-year-olds. Eventually, you're going to lose a match.
Do they have a good club program?
Apparently.
Little Sisters of the Poor?
Yeah.
I heard they were down at the ASC complaining about the prices, but we'll get to that later. Yeah, I think they have a good shot at it. We were chatting earlier. The only thing that's really going to derail them is age and wear and tear. We're talking injury. And they've had those issues over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
The question will be, will that crop up now? And you know that they're going to be very judicious about their preparation. You know they're going to be on top of listening to their bodies, because as you get older, you get so much more attuned to listening to your body and how to treat it. But there's nothing you can do about those instantaneous moments or whatever the progressive wear and tear is from 15, 20 years of volleyball.
Well, when they know how to play volleyball, that's not an issue.
Funny that.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not like, they can still get better, but what are they going to learn on the beach? Like, what else do they need to know about volleyball?
Their max performance, their possible max performance, is still better than anyone else.
Yeah. And I still think you have to play an almost perfect match to beat them. And even if they're not playing at 100%, it's still hard to beat them.
Okay. I think they saw that mental advantage, too.
Of course.
I think that's faded for Tiger.
Yes.
But I think it hasn't faded for Misty and Carey.
I think it has a little bit, because they didn't dominate this last year what people expected them to. They still had a good year last year on paper if you look at it.
Yeah.
They didn't dominate like they have in the past. So I'm curious if Brazil looks at that as like, oh, they're not as good.
Well, you remember how Brazil celebrated when they beat
them.
They
celebrated like they won the gold
medal.
Like
they won the gold medal.
Like Carey Misty's first tournament back, they make it to the finals, and Brazil celebrates like they just won the lottery.
Okay. So will Misty and Carey win?
You want my prediction right now?
Yep.
It's March.
I know. It's a little early. It doesn't matter, because no one will remember when we later, right before the Olympics.
Are you saying people don't hang on my every word, Kevin? Is that what you're trying to say right now? The chat board's blowing up about me.
I didn't want it to come out that way and be so brutal, but yes. I mean, you figured it out.
I believe I do. I think they'll win. You're pausing to read the message board.
I am.
It has nothing to do with me. I was just joking.
I'm actually reading what they're writing about this particular item.
Yes. Do you think they'll win? I know what you want to say, but do you think they'll win?
I mean, what I want to say.
I just know you.
Do I think they'll win?
It's like, do you take them or the field?
You know, right now.
Oh, boy. Here it comes.
Right now. And because no one will remember in 3 months when we make our predictions.
Until I copy this and play it in the show.
I think it's a reasonable bet to take the field.
Of course.
That's a pretty good. I remember, you know, Tiger of the Field. Everybody takes that Tiger of the Field. I think Misty and Carey are a threat to win every single time.
100%.
They're not at that 80% level anymore. Because I think partially to your point, the world has risen.
Yeah.
And you see this in every sport, the progression of everything. Because kids grew up, I want to play like those people. You don't see it quite as quickly in the volleyball world. It's a little slower time frame than a lot of other sports. Because there are longer careers. Right now, I will take Misty and Carey to win.
Interesting. Now, let's flip that over. What about Phil and Todd?
Ooh, this is tougher because I think the men's side is a more unpredictable situation. I think the talent is very deep on the men's side of the game worldwide. Not to mention some of the U.S. talent that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think Phil and Todd stand less of a chance right now without any information from this season of taking the gold medal. I'll be really making that definitive statement.
Percentage-wise, you would say Karen Missy have a higher percentage of winning it again
yes.
than Phil and Todd.
Yes, okay. I think so. I think Phil is the best player out there, period.
With you.
I think Todd, again, becomes the same question. Can he stay healthy?
Mm-hmm.
No reason to believe he won't, but it's always a question at that age. Question for anybody,
yep.
but certainly when Todd is, you're talking about a guy who's my generation of player, and my broken down body is sitting here, but Todd has done a fantastic job of maintaining his body, but it's got to be a question.
Well, he's coming off that injury that ended his season last year.
Right. So there's some real issues there. Right now, I might take the field. I think I'll take the field on Phil and Todd. Take nothing away from how great they are, and I think that they're
those would be
in that conversation. But I think that you got to go with the field if you're phrasing it that way.
Personally, the thing I don't like is that I won't be able to see a lot of these top teams this summer domestically like I have the last Olympics.
Yeah.
So I it's hard to get that. Like, are they dominating the teams here that they need to be dominating? Or are they just kind of squeaking by? Like, Phil and Todd were handling their business here before they went to the Olympics last year, and same with Carey and Misty. So, like, you felt really good about it going in. And I won't be able to get that personal vibe this summer.
2008 doesn't seem like it was that long ago.
It wasn't, Kevin.
I had a conversation with somebody the other night. 4 years just blew past us, and I can't believe we're at the London Games already.
I'm excited. I actually really am. I'm really looking forward to it.
So while we're in this space of, right now, predicting what's going to happen, indoor teams on the same schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Women's indoor. Will they win the gold medal? Them or the field?
Now, I definitely don't know enough about indoor, but from what you guys have been saying and from what I've been reading, they are playing at a high level. So I would have to give them a high chance. The men haven't qualified yet for the Olympics, so I can't.
They're not even in the conversation as of right now.
I can't give them a high chance as of yet. I'll let you know after after May.
After they qualify, we'll come back to that for them. But for the women, I'm taking the women. I think that team's going to win the gold. I think they're the best team in the world. I think they have more talent than anybody else right now.
You're so
in
confident
their gym.
About that. I like that.
And I think they have the best coaching staff in the world.
Well, you've seen the other teams as well.
Absolutely. I've seen the other teams. I've watched a lot of the other coaches. I've watched a lot of the other coaches for years. I've watched the other teams for years. I have never seen, men's or women's, a more talented, a deeper gym than what the USA women have right now. They have some honest-to-goodness difficult choices to make with their roster as to who to take to make the best team because they have so much talent in that gym. You could go a couple of different directions.
Who is their biggest competition, do you think?
Brazil. Italy, right up there.
Yeah.
Russia could do something. They can't get a coach for some reason to motivate those ladies the right
Interesting.
Way. The men, it's been the same issue. They cannot play the game well enough, even though I think the Russian men are the best men's team in the world. I think they're still well under what they should be.
Like the best team as in they have the most talent, or you think as a team they actually are the best?
They have shown at times to be the best team.
Gotcha.
That's the question, though. It's been so rare. They can't, for whatever reason, if it's their mentality, if it's the coach, if it's the economics of how well they're doing financially, individually in those leagues,
yeah.
and the attention that they're getting and trying to come together as a group, I don't know exactly, but man, that team has amazing volleyball talent and at times has played like the dominating team that I really believe they ought to be. They could probably put together two teams that would qualify for the games in Russia, which
wow.
you couldn't say for the United States men. The United States men could not put together two teams. The United States women, maybe.
What's the difference from the women's team going into this Olympics than the one last time?
On the women's team?
Yeah.
You know, last time they were not expected to do as well as they did, I don't think.
Correct.
I think it's the depth. I think it's the experience. I think it's the system. I think Hugh has put in a really nice system. And we've said this before on the program, and this is the genius of Hugh McCutchen or Phil Jackson. He's able to articulate to the ladies on a daily basis, on a personal basis, the overall goal and their role in that goal as they start to define those roles over 4 years. And then get them to buy in. And that's the genius. You think about the Bulls. You get Steve Kerr to buy into, you're our three-point guy. You're our spot-up three-point shooter.
That's all I want you to do.
Right. Bill Weddington, Cliff Levingston, Bill Cartwright.
Just rebound and play defense.
The big Aussie, whose name is escaping me at the moment.
Luke something.
Yes. But able to get those players to buy into their role and understand their role and perform in that way. And I think that that has happened with the men's team in 08 under Hugh McCutchen's tutelage. I think you saw that. And it was a difficult process, but I think Hugh learned so much through that process.
Mm.
I think he brought that experience to the women's team. I think he brought that the things that he learned to the women's team. And he's now been able to apply it to what has always been, I think, a deep pool of talent. What I think is an increasingly educated and quality pool of talent because of the acceleration of juniors and the acceleration of the women's college programs. And I think he's really been able to apply and refine a system that he put into place with the men with such success to a talent pool that's better. And I think the results are not surprising.
And do you feel like the women bought into that pretty quickly?
Pretty quickly, because I think they were sort of adrift in the ocean. They'd been through two foreign coaches. You've been through a Japanese coach and a Chinese coach. And the Asian philosophy, in some ways, does not translate to American athletes.
Mm-hmm.
The constant driving and hours and repetition and some of the crazy technical choices that they make with extra movements and that kind of stuff. I think our women were somewhat adrift given the differences that had gone from Mick Haley to Toshi to Jenny Longping.
So even after winning the silver,
yes,
you think they were ready for an adjustment?
I think so. Because that team, if you remember, if you go back and look at the scores, that's a team that struggled early on,
but
then got hot at just the right moment.
Yep.
Had a great defeat of Italy, pounded Cuba, just jumped on a Cuban team that's what you had to do to those Cuban teams is jump on them and just stuck them in the ground. And then had a pretty good final against Brazil. But I think a team just got hot at the right moment.
Yeah.
And early on that tournament, if you told me they were going to make the final and pull a silver, I would have said, no, I don't think that's likely to happen. Because they were struggling. They weren't passing the ball well. They weren't performing well on the outside. They had a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And that all came around and filled them with some confidence and great success and a fantastic, what turned out to be a great event. I remember one of the ladies saying to me, hey, my family's been saying you guys are commentating and saying that it was in us to do well. And that's what we were saying early on, is they had the talent. It just wasn't there. And I think that's with the men. We're in that space right now. And unfortunately, it's coming into qualification. They have the talent. They can play with the best teams in the world. They can beat anybody. They can also lose to anybody. And that is a tough situation to be in.
That's crazy. I mean, when you know that you're that good and you can definitely beat anyone, but you could lose to anybody as well.
Right, and I'm talking about maybe the top 12, top 15
teams.
Of course. We're not talking about number 30.
You're not talking about the Washington Wizards.
Or 50, yeah. But that men's team has some legitimate talent to compete for a medal position, for a podium position.
Well,
will they do it is the big question.
I'm looking forward to seeing them in person in May. I will be there. Because I've never seen them in person.
And because I know where you live.
Exactly.
Who will be the two men's teams on the beach side, or the other men's team on the beach side, and do
question,
they have a chance? Is the question
coming from our chat board. Well, it's either going to be Matt Furbringer and Nick Lucena or Jake Gibb and Sean Rosenthal. I think they're very separated by, I mean, one team finishes better in one tournament, that gets them in.
And do they have a chance? I think they do have a chance. I think they've proven they have a chance. Both those teams have won tournaments.
Absolutely.
On the international stage.
Yep.
It's happened. So you're not going to go out and say it's not going to happen. Will they get hot? It's one tournament, 2 weeks out of 4 years. Will they get hot? Can Matt Furbringer and Nick Lucena win an international volleyball tournament? Can they win the Olympics? Yes, they can.
Yep.
Will they? It's an entirely different question.
Well, and Jake and Sean are good enough to win the gold medal as well.
Yes.
Will they? Is also another question.
They have not shown the consistency to this point necessary for us to make a prediction like that, to talk about them in the way you would talk about a Phil and Todd.
If the qualification process or how to get to the Olympics was different, would you put John Hyden and Sean Scott as our second best men's team, U.S. men's team?
You'd like it to be, and it may be, 4 years from now, a situation like that, mm-hmm. like the men's national team, where you qualify a spot and you are selected by your national governing body a month out. That is how it works for the indoor athletes. The beach athletes increasingly would like to be treated like indoor athletes. Well, welcome to the system,
yep.
I think is what will happen in 4 years. And I think that is a just system. It can be manipulated, obviously, if we just don't like you. If you're USAV and you just don't like Sean and John. But you have to trust. At some level, you have to trust. And we can get into those trust issues. We've talked about it before in this program. And those issues are changing. And as my era of player falls away, the view of USA Volleyball will be so much different. But I think that should be the system. Because you would never send a Blanton Nygaard to the Olympics back in 2004.
Correct.
You wouldn't do it. Not playing well, not having results, even though they won the tournament the very next weekend in Chicago after stinking it up in Atlanta, or in Athens.
On paper, they were a much better team than they were in person.
Right. And you would know that. And you would select another team based on that. Yeah. And who knows if that team does any better? Who cares? It's not the point.
Well, I don't believe Sean and John are playing internationally this year. I've seen the U.S. men's teams that are playing in the first FIVB event, and their names are not on that list. And I think points-wise, it would be really difficult for them to even qualify anyways.
The collapse of volleyball has caused some of that. You're talking about the team that did very well in the AVP, was the other big team in that tournament, beat Sean and John heads up three times that
Phil
season.
Phil and Todd.
Or, pardon me, Phil and Todd.
They were the only team that would beat Phil and Todd on any...
At least twice, if not three times that year in a final.
Consistent, but more than anybody else.
Yeah, so that was a team with legitimate talent that I think got caught in the collapse of volleyball.
Yep.
I'd like to see a selection process more similar to the indoor side of things.
Not for this Olympics, though.
I would like to have seen it for this Olympics.
Well,
to some extent.
But at this point, it's way too late.
I'd really like to see trials. I think trials is an answer. We're going to come back to it.
Well, we were going to get that until the collapse because there was really no domestic, real viable way to do that.
Yeah. I think trials is the answer to the publicity problem, to the quality problem. Go to trials. It's essentially what practice is every day for the men's team.
Yeah.
You start playing scrimmages and stuff. It's all trials. It's just not a public, because there's no way to do it. There's no way to have a trial system with an indoor team because the qualification is inherently that. But
yeah. Well, look, we're going to send two of the best U.S. teams, men and women, to the Olympics, regardless
right.
of what our system is this year.
And we're going to have a shot. That's the great thing. We're going to have a shot.
Yeah.
We're not going to send a team that doesn't have a shot, and lots of other countries will be doing that.
Now, here's this. Last Olympics, we came back with 4 medals. Do you think we'll do that again?
No.
Interesting. How many do you think we'll bring back?
Oh, well, I guess we came back with 4. I was thinking more along the lines of being in every final. Could we come back with 4 medals? Yeah, because we have 6 chances
yep.
for 4 medals. That's possible.
Okay.
That's possible. I'm thinking about gold medals. Will we ever replicate the 3 gold medals and a silver? I don't think so.
It's difficult.
It's amazing to have that. I don't think we're going to replicate that. I think the women are going to win. And I'll go on record from now until the Olympics start. The women are going to win. If they don't, it's all Hugh McCutcheon's fault. But if they
he will never be back on the show.
That's right. No, he'll be taking over the show. It'll be his next career.
No, I think that the women are going to win. The men could win.
They got to qualify first.
Let's get through Norseca before we worry too much more about that. They have to beat a really tough Cuban team. Their pool is hilarious. Mexico, Trinidad and Tobago, and Costa Rica. The other side is Cuba, Canada, Puerto Rico,
Do you worry that they won't take it, the urgency of this tournament, because of the teams they have to play? Like, are you worried about that at all?
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not. I think that team, the experience of those guys, they grasp the gravity of the whole thing.
Good. If you're not, then I'm not.
All right. I'm not worried.
Okay.
I am worried that they won't qualify out of that event. I am concerned it will come down to those tournaments in early June.
Because they have to win this event to qualify.
Correct.
They can't come in second. They can't come in third.
Correct.
They need to win it.
Canada, Puerto Rico, not much of a threat. Puerto Rico, they've gotten hot. They've defeated them, but Puerto Rico's sliding down. They're losing their shirts.
Cuba's who we need to be worried about.
Cuba.
Okay.
It's about the United States and Cuba. That's what you're going to see. It's going to be a tough tournament. Jay Hossig on the board. You're right. It's going to be a tough tournament. Absolutely. The semis and the finals will be tough matches. No doubt. Because it doesn't matter if it's Puerto Rico or Canada crossing across. If you lose in that semi, it's over. There's no coming back. So the United States is going to skate through their pool, but it's going to be rough.
So pool, it's not single eliminations. Pool play, you can make it out of your pool.
Pool play.
Then it's single elimination.
Semi-final.
Okay.
That's it. That semi won't be easy.
Cam Kerr is throwing the Canadian name in there.
He wants to throw Canada in there.
I understand. He's from there.
Here's the thing, Cam. And I know Keith Sanheim may be listening to this program. I know Bruce Edwards may be listening to this program. The facts bear it out. The United States men's volleyball team owns Canada when the chips are down. Owns them. On their own floor in the middle of winter in Winnipeg to qualify for the Olympics, the United States owns Canada. And yes, I was a sub in that match. I didn't even get the starter play. It was a rough time for me. Okay? Don't let Fred Winters hear you say that. Fred Winters. Yeah, we own Canada. Until such time as we don't. But currently...
Until we lose to you, we own you.
Paid for, loonies and toonies, you in our jail when it's the Olympic time.
Love it.
Cuba, that's another story. Cuba owned Norseca for a while. We've owned it lately. They could very easily take it back.
And is there... I've been seeing some things here and there. Is there a Cuban player who's really good but kind of on the team, not on the team?
Wilfredo Leon.
Yeah.
Debuted at 16. I think MVP at 18 of the world, world championships maybe. Something close like that. Leon is ridiculous, yes.
Then he's on the team. Ish.
You know.
Either you are or you aren't.
I
understand.
Can't wait to see the security around these guys so they don't defect while they're here for Olympic qualification. Actually, if they qualify, I think maybe they won't defect if they qualify, but then they will defect in London in mass, which is what has happened. The Cuban team has lost unbelievable number of athletes to defection. Hold their whole starting lineup basically in 2001. Just gone.
They played internationally and they just stayed.
Yep. Took off to Italy.
Good times.
Angel Dennis, Osvaldo Hernandez. I mean, gone. Two of the best players in the world right there at the time. Matt Gardhoff wonders if we can get a few guys to defect during the volley BQ. Vol BQ.
Yeah.
So this is an event that Matt Gardhoff is putting on. He's got a link up on our Facebook page to his Facebook page. We're putting some effort into getting an approval from Long Beach State. Plan on making Saturday a day event, not just an evening event. Saturday, May 12th. The finals. Plan on making that an all-day event for yourself. Trying to get permission to have a tailgate-style party. DJ Roche out there spinning in your NetLive t-shirt.
Oh, for sure.
Chance to meet DJ Roche and learn how to spell his name.
I told you the only reason why I won't be there, correct?
If the Clippers are in the playoffs or something.
Correct.
Okay.
If there's a home playoff game that day. I have a contract with them. I would have to be there. If not, I will turn down every other gig to be at this one.
I will give you a pass on personal violence for that reason.
Thank you. If I'm not there, though.
But plan on being there.
Done. It's already on the calendar.
Matt Gardhoff's going to put on an event. We're working on some sponsors. We want it to be big and fun, and we're going to get some guys out there, maybe some of the guys who aren't in the match itself, but national team members. Maybe we'll even get some of the national team guys to wander by. I'm sure we can get them to come for 5 minutes. and talk to you guys. Plan on making that an event. Go on the Facebook page right now. Click on that thing. Like that thing so you can continue to get updates as we get it approved and as we pull in some sponsors. We're looking around the volley world for some sponsors to make this something that's fantastic, because this is the biggest volleyball event that has occurred in the United States in the last 20 years. And I don't care about your Hermosa Open. I don't care about your Manhattan Open. I don't care about some juniors club tournament. I don't care about Crossroads. Nothing. NCAA championships, who cares? This is Olympic qualification. This is the real deal on U.S. soil. Win, you're in. Lose, you go to Japan in early June for your last chance.
And nobody wants that.
No. So show up on Saturday. Come to the barbecue. Have a great time. We're going to try and provide food, drink, music, fun, personalities, entertainment. It's going to be awesome. Show up. Make it awesome. Get to this event in the evening and cheer on the United States. So more information coming on that.
And the link to buy tickets is posted on our Facebook page.
Perfect.
Yeah.
USA Volleyball has it up on their page. We know that they're busy this week moving their office.
Ugh.
They're moving to the brand new building. USA Volleyball doing well, going places, expanding the budget. You heard from Doug Beal about 3 weeks ago on this program about the strides that USA Volleyball are making. They're going the right direction. They need your support. I know there's issues. If you're a juniors player, I know there's issues with governance and tournaments and fees and everything else. I know. I hear you. Hang in there. Keep fighting the good fight, but stay. Stay in the fight. Don't jump out. Don't do a beach and try and jump out the window.
I'm looking online right now. Tickets for the finals with a chair back, $20.
You have $20, people.
Bench, general admission, 10 to 12.
That is a third of a price of a pair of Birkenstocks, you volley dorks. Okay?
That's really going to get people to go.
And only the cost of 4 bottles of tie-dye, okay?
And you get to see the best players in the world.
What if I don't want to back on my chair, which, by the way, is a bad idea, but what if I don't want to back on my chair?
$10 to $12.
$10 to $12. You have that in your couch. Look under the cushions. Take the money from there. Don't go to Taco Bell. Send it to USAV. Show up at the event. It's going to be awesome. Or else.
I'm looking at the seating chart right now. I need you to tell me where I'm going to buy my seats. Not right now, just later.
We'll talk about that. Let's move along the program here. I got to figure out, we did this last week. It's going to have to be the same. Here we go. This is all we have for this school. I mean, they're anteaters for crying out loud.
Again?
The Net Live, in combination with the American Volleyball Coaches Association, is proud to present each week the College Volleyball Weekly, a recap of the best that was and the best that will be in the world of college volleyball. It's still the men, and it's still the UC Irvine Anteaters taking down all the first-place votes. That's right. Nobody even voted for Northridge, number one, because Eater doesn't have a vote. So we bring in our correspondents, Jay Hossick. It doesn't sound quite as cool as the UCLA song, but it's close. And Mike Sonheimer. Gentlemen, welcome in as the band finishes up. Big finish from the band there, UCI Anteaters, holding on to the top spot. Jay, let's start with you. Let's talk about back east. You beat St. Francis. Way to go.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Was it just him? Was it just St. Francis out there, or did he have a couple of buddies with him?
No, it was only St. Francis. That's all who it was. Just one guy. We played 6-1. No, St. Francis not a bad team. We just played much better. I'd rather talk about is Ball State and Ohio State happening last night. Ohio State up 10-6 in the fifth, and Ball State rallying a 9-2 scoring run and coming back to beat them at their home place. That's a nice win there for Ball State and Joel Walton and the gang.
Yep.
And Harvard beating Cal Baptist again out at their place this time. And unfortunately, though, Pepperdine did beat Harvard in four, so Barney, you are clean for this week as well. But somewhere down the line, something's going to sting you. I know it. I can feel it.
Pepperdine holding down that mediocre 7 spot on the top 10, but doing a good job in there. And interestingly enough, as I review my AVCA College Volleyball Weekly update, Cal Baptist defeated by the aforementioned Harvard 4-1. So very strange tournament match there. 4-1. I'm not
four
sure.
Sets. By the way, I got next set when I'm back out west with you guys. So I just want to make sure.
Pumping that one.
Thanks.
Just to bother DJ Roach. Yeah.
I hate sets. I can't stand that phrase.
All right, moving over, Mike Sonheimer, let's talk about your home Bruins. They went out there and lost 0-3 to Southern Cal. Appear to be on a little bit of a slide. They do, in fact, move to number 3 in this week's standings as a result of that loss, but then came back and pounded Pepperdine 3-0.
Well, I think you have to talk about what Bill Ferguson's done with this USC team that was the favorite last year to win NCAAs, lost a few players. They've won 10 in a row. They've won 12 out of 13. And they are on a roll now, crushing everybody. And you have to look at the MPSF standings now. You have Irvine, UCLA, and BYU with 3 losses, Stanford and USC with 4 losses. So you got 5 people in the run for the title now, and that's the job that Ferguson, who won his 100th career match, has done with USC to bring him back into it. And with Taylor Sander back at BYU, they won a great 5-set match over in Hawaii the first night and crushed him in 3 the second night.
Mike, we've had a couple of questions from listeners saying, hey, UCLA, we hear about their good. They were ranked number 1 at one point, but we haven't heard much about the athletes because we always hear about a Taylor Sander and some of the other big Kevin Tilley guys out there, but we haven't heard a lot about UCLA. Who are the real stars on that team, or is it really truly a team at the moment?
I think that you have to go to Kyle Caldwell. He's finally healthy for the first time in 4 years. You have a 6'9 setter, lefty, who can dump the ball, hit the ball on twos, done a great job. And I think UCLA really does have the best two middle blockers in Wes Dunlap and Thomas Amberg that are both, you know, really fine players. Amberg had a sprained ankle for a little while. They're both healthy. The key for UCLA and what they don't have that the other top teams, the other 4 teams have mentioned, is a great pin hitter. And how far UCLA goes and where they can win an NCAA title for Al Skates in year 50 is going to be how well the pin hitters can play. And that's really Gonzalo from Argentina, Jeremy Caspar, and UCLA still is trying to figure out that opposite position.
Jay, talking about number 6, Lewis. You gave us Lewis versus Limestone. And just the rundown, they played Limestone, Lindenwood, and apparently the King High School basketball team out there. That's the only King I've ever heard of. But they defeated all those teams 3-0.
Yeah, you know, these are new teams that are starting up. Limestone obviously has been in the mix for a couple of years. The new conference, Carolinas, the Division II conference that I believe in the next few years is going to receive their automatic qualifier. At least they're talking about it. I'm not sure of the actual voting process, how it's gone out, but I know that they are applying and they should be accepted here pretty soon for their own automatic qualifying spot. And I think that's when the real talk of the expansion of the Final Four to maybe an 8-team field might actually start taking shape. But, you know, I mean, Lewis is doing what, you know, any team wants to do in this time of the year. There's a lot of schools, especially on the West Coast, that are taking spring breaks off. And rather than take a couple weeks, you know, they I don't want to say throw a bone. That's a bad phrase. But they're giving an opportunity to a school to put a good top 10 program on their schedule. And, you know, they're maybe getting a chance to play some other members on their squads that normally get a chance to play. And, you know, in the future, Limestone could be a contender for that AQ spot out of the Carolina Conference.
All right, give you the rundown here. UC Irvine, number 1. Southern California, number 2. UCLA, 3. BYU, 4. Stanford, who was idle in the 5th spot. Lewis, 6th. Pepperdine, 7th. Penn State, 8th. Long Beach, 9. Ohio State, 10. And then Pacific Hawaii, UC San Diego, Cal State Northridge, and UC Santa Barbara holding down the rest of the top 15. And, Mike, my question to you about that top 15 is, looking at UC Santa Barbara, we knew they graduated all those players. They were going to struggle. They lost most of their offense, Jeff Menzel, out of there and playing professionally now. We knew it was going to be a tough season. But at 5-15 and 3-13 in their own conference, the MPSF, how can they possibly remain number 15 over, say, a Ball State or a Harvard
that have more wins. Ball State's 11-7, for God's sake.
It's all relative to the people voting. I mean, I think if Santa Barbara was in the Midwest or the Eastern Conference, they'd be contending for the conference title right now. Rick McLaughlin is a tremendous coach. He proved it last year, getting that close to winning an NCAA championship for the Gauchos. And you go through those lean years and trying to rebuild. They're competitive in certain matches. Other matches, they're getting beat. But if you put them in those other teams, they can play right with them.
I am remiss not to mention Cal State Northridge, lost to UC Irvine 0-3, lost to San Diego 3-1.
Another team that would do well if they played the other schedule, but that's the difference. And like basketball, where you have time to go and play all these national schedules, the conferences have so many matches that you get a couple of weeks or 3 weeks a year where you can play some outside teams, and you try to do it. And we'll have to forget about Vergeeter, the loss to Harvard. But again, all these teams, the volleyball across the country gets more competitive, and I wish that Penn State could make two or three trips west, and a couple teams could make a couple trips east, and you'd have more competitive volleyball, and maybe you can go to an eight-team championship if you could do it that way.
I tell you what, Sonny, and I want to just kind of piggyback on that. I think there's a number of teams now, especially at the bigger schools that have football, that are making those trips more and more apparent. I know our schedule, we fly out there twice a year, and then the Hawaii Outrigger Tournament we go to as well. And I know that Ohio State's made some trips out there, and Lewis has gone out there consistently. Loyola makes the trip as well. What's nice to see, and you're absolutely right, Sonny, what's really nice to see is that for years there's been the East Coast-West Coast conflict. Everybody says the West Coast is better, and for whatever reason, people have joined on board with that because of the conference strength from top to bottom. But now what you're starting to see is that places like here at Penn State, places like Ohio State, we're doing these crossover matches and tournaments where now we can both bring out two different teams for the tournament, and they can get a chance to see where they fit against everybody else across the country. And we'd love to see we would absolutely love to see an 18 field. As much as everyone wants to say, well, Penn State's got the easy road, that doesn't matter to us. We're doing what we're doing here. Don't get mad at us. Get mad at everybody else. But we'd love to see an 18 field. It would be awesome for men's volleyball to see other teams get a chance to get in there and have some possible upsets. I would love to see a Limestone. I would love to see a Grand Canyon get in there and get a chance. That's just good for men's volleyball all across the board. And you might see some other schools say, hey, we can put together a team, and we can, field a solid program and get some notoriety out here. So, the more we see those interconference matches, the better off everything's going to be for men's volleyball across the board. I encourage the ADs that are listening, any of the women's coaches that used to play on men's varsity programs, start a program. This is the time to strike while the iron's hot.
I'm mad at you. I'm mad at Penn State for just making the final all the time, Jay, but I guess it's not right. And I'm also
they have great coaches. That's why they get there. I mean, people like Jay, they wouldn't get there without coaches like that.
Sonny, you flatter me. Where do I send that $20 bill to?
USA Volleyball, looking as they move to their new offices.
Yeah, there you go.
Those offices.
There you go. I am definitely going to be at the North Sagan matches. And Jeremy, you want the best seats? The best seats are behind the end line. That's where all the two volleyball players sit. So tickets there.
All right, so there was a petition last week talking about Hilo trying to start a program and the support for that. I'm going to start one for CSUN to the EVA so they can start.
That'd be awesome. You know what? I mean, somebody mentioned out here, and I think it was just in jest, but somebody mentioned, what if Penn State and Ohio State were to join the MPSF? And immediately everybody thought, well, the travel and all the costs. Hawaii does it. BYU makes a lot of travel. I mean, granted, I don't think that move is going to happen, but it's not impossible to think about that. I mean, it could possibly happen someday in the future. You never know.
I'd rather see you add another team into the Big Ten Conference. You got another team to play. Get a couple more.
If the Big Ten and Colin McMillan
get Michigan or something like that.
Yeah.
Wisconsin
would be good immediately.
Yeah.
Northwestern would be good immediately. Illinois, Michigan, all those schools. Nebraska. God, Nebraska could be good tomorrow if they started a team.
I don't think John Cook would allow anything. He wants to be the king of town.
Well, and unfortunately, John Cook's response was Title IX,
don't
believe that that's the real answer. And John, I challenge you.
If they have such a following, they would be so
great
at that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, John, if you're listening, I challenge you, John. I don't think that's the real answer. But if that's the answer we're going to go with, I guess that is what it is. I'm not going to make any friends by that statement. But, I just think that the men's coaches or the women's coaches – that are men that played on varsity programs. I just think it's imperative that you give back to what gave to you. There is an opportunity here for men's programs across the country to be starting up programs, and I'd love to see it start happening, obviously from a professional standpoint, but just because boys volleyball in general gets left behind an awful lot. And I just, you know, we're seeing programs starting to kickstart their way up to the top, and yet now we're seeing sand volleyball start with more scholarships for women's side. And I'm not knocking them. Don't get me wrong. Don't send me hate mail. But women's sand volleyball is now getting more scholarships, and so now we're up into the 16 scholarship
yep.
range for the women's side. And yet the men still get 4.5. And if you ask any AD in the country, what's the easiest program that you have to deal with year in and year out? It's your men's volleyball team. Because we are not headaches. So I challenge you. I challenge every coach out there. Call me up. I'll get on the fight with you.
The gauntlet has been thrown down by Jay. And, Jay, to your point about Nebraska, over under 3 years, if Nebraska started a men's team until they qualified for the national championship Final Four.
What conference are they in?
Put them in the MEVA.
Put them in the MEVA. Under 3 years, easily.
Mike?
It's going to be an off week. Most schools are on finals week. It's most of the UCs and Stanford. And 2 weeks from now, though, UCLA at Irvine on the 31st, sold out Little Crawford Hall. They have a martial arts tournament in the Bren Center. That will be a standing room only type of match.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Really?
Yes.
Nice.
Do I have to start talking about Magic the Gathering on TV instead of volleyball? We'll take it back that far. We're talking about a martial arts tournament in the Bren Center.
You know, Barney, I tell you, if your motocross career doesn't take off, you might be doing some of those things on TV. Who knows?
Hey,
better start bringing out your cards.
I can be bought. Let it be clear.
he's got all those helmets now and jackets and everything else for motocross. His kids are already covered in it now.
That's right. It was a great event this past week. All right, so... Jay, give us your predictions for coming up this week or next.
Well, let's see. In the Midwest, Ball State and Loyola should be a good match. Army, the IPFW boys are going up against Lewis, and I want to see if Lewis can hang on here. Loyola and Grand Canyon. And strangely enough right now, Grand Canyon's in the lead in the MEVA. They're undefeated, but they have not played the majority of their conference schedule yet, so I'm interested to see where that goes. As far as out here on the East, Penn State's picking up the NJIT boys again. That's Barney's favorite team. In fact, I'm going to get you a T-shirt, Barney. And St. Francis is playing Rutgers. Harvard playing Sacred Heart. That's going to be a good match. Out west, here's what I want to see. I want to see Hawaii and Northridge. There is an 8-12 in the MPSF right now that is fighting for that last spot. And Hawaii and CSUN are neck and neck. And, you know, Hawaii's had a little bit of a struggle there. They had that nice win at Stanford. If they can't hang on here, it's going to be awfully tough. So I'm going to watch that one with some open eyes and see what's going on. Those are the two. And George Mason's playing at USC this week.
All right. Also out there, our friend Vinny Lopes of Off the Block. He's actually starting a little bracketology. He's putting together a little preview of what could be the Final Four and his little bracket tournament that he's going to run. Or his big bracket tournament. Pardon me, Vinny. On Off the Block. So check that out. He's posted on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thenetlive. Get out there
and
check
it out. And Vinny has done great things for men's volleyball. He has really helped push all the information out there and videos and updates. And, you know, his website, Off the Block, is getting a lot of hits. And I cannot be happier that somebody's taking that ball and running with it. So, Vinny, good on you, man.
Very good. Mike, Jay, thank you
Always
very much.
A pleasure.
Look
Have
forward
a great
to
week.
This week. All right.
See you, boys.
But that was the College of Volleyball Weekly right there with Jay and Mike.
That was good.
They're good. They go back and forth. I like when they kind of take over because they know more about the topic than I do. So
that's why we have one.
Exactly. All right, DJ Roche, we're going to take a short break.
Cool.
We're going to be right back on the other side talking about Volley America. Rich Hiles and Mike.
Todd
Goronski. Sorry, Todd. I know you're on the line.
Don't even know where to guess.
Dude, I got a lot going right here. I'm looking at four computers and looking at people dropping off the line and Blog Talk only half functioning at the moment. So, hey, lots more here to come. You guys have been looking for information about the beach, about developmental programs. It's coming up next in the Net Live.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news, and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access to sports' biggest stars. Whether you're interested in junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmag.com and subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottle Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
You don't have to find the best college coaches. They find you at Spire Institute. Spire's postgraduate volleyball academy wants athletes. Spire delivers customized volleyball training and competition led by head coach John Hawks, athletic development with Michael Johnson Performance, and educational options all in Olympic-grade facilities. There is no better way to impress college coaches and increase scholarship opportunities. Spire Institute, postgraduate men's and women's programs in multiple sports. It's not taking a year off, it's adding a year to your future. Sign up today at spireinstitute.org. Welcome back to the Net Live.
Sorry.
Here on Volleyball Magazine website. Volleyball Magazine, they're putting a lot of effort into increasing the quality of that product.
They are.
They're putting a lot in, so get out there and check one out. Check out their new website.
Going over their offices today for something that I'll talk about later.
Oh, you're going to talk to Aubrey, are you?
No, Aubrey's not in town right now. Somebody else. Well, I'll let you know when.
Okay. I got a call with those lovely folks tomorrow.
Excellent.
Talk about the Volley BQ. Volbeq. Good. Yeah, let's say it right there.
Volbeq.
Volbeq. Hey, we just had a good college volleyball weekly with Mike and Jay. Lots to watch out there. UCLA and UC Irvine coming up in 2 weeks, and then a whole bunch of East Coast action happening here in this next week as we hit into the spring break where guys' programs take a little bit of time off, kids are gone. I'll tell you what, I traveled on Friday to India, as I've mentioned, and the airport in Denver was full of college kids.
Oh, yeah.
Full.
Like, we got to get out of here.
Anyone with a ponytail on the side of their head is definitely not in the working world, and there were lots of that. of those individuals out there.
See lots of neon, too, by chance?
Yeah, lots of neon. It looks like the 80s again.
The 80s are back.
It looks like when I was about my kid's age, like maybe 10, 9 or 10.
80s weren't, it's not a good decade.
Varnay, back in style for sure. I remember I had a black Varnay tank top that I wore even though I weighed 122 pounds.
Varnay or Varnay?
Isn't it Varnay?
No, I was just making fun of you.
I don't know how to say it right necessarily. It's a French company, but it had like their symbol on the front with a circle, and it was all different neon colors. I would be so cool in that right now.
Mm.
Well, maybe not right now. But if I was that age, I would be wearing it. Yeah. The pink, the green, it's all back. It's all back.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it's showing up on the beach, and we're going to find out here from our next guest,
cool.
Jeremy. Got a couple of great gentlemen who are trying to get it done in the volleyball world, making steps in the right direction. Our one man, Todd Goronsky, is in charge of Bradford Beach there in Milwaukee. And despite the horrible weather that the Midwest has, although it hasn't in the last 3 weeks, he's getting it done on the beach. Hosted all kinds of pro events, brings in pros, been in the beach volleyball promotion world for a long time. And then Volley America's Rich Hiles. We're going to learn about Volley America today during this segment. Gentlemen, Rich, Todd, welcome to Net Live. Whoa.
Can you guys hear me?
There, that's better.
Up, Mike.
I'm here too. Can you hear that?
There, that's better. I don't know what happened there. We had a little hotness coming in.
Uh-oh.
Rich, I want to start with you. I want to start with you because I've been clicking around Volley America, and Geeta was telling me about Volley America and talking about the membership push that you guys have had and the success you've been having. Give me an overview of what Volley America is.
Well, it's basically just a big grassroots organization. We've had a number of promoters over the years who have formed different organizations. I've been involved in a few of them, and they've all kind of just never quite done enough for the players. And so I'm with East End Volleyball. We run, we've been running tournaments as our 35th season coming up. So I kind of know what we're doing by now, I hope. And we just decided to get a bunch of the promoters together and do things that help the players. So we ended up with almost 11,000 paid members the first year. And we're just giving money back to the players in the forms of Grand Prix and trips to national championships and prizes that we send to the promoters. And we have some big groups like myself and Tides and Great American Volleyball. And then we have a lot of small groups that we're helping to get big in their area, just making them part of a big national program.
Okay, so you have dues-paying members. You take in that money, and then you sanction events, and you provide prize money for events?
First of all, we supply insurance, which is very important to all the players, basically like what AVP Next is doing. And then we have a Grand Prix where you earn points at all Volley America sanctioned events. And at the end of the year, we give out $25,000 in prize money just to those players. We have a national ranking system. We have the Grand Prix system. That's all on the website, and people can keep up to date on how they're doing. And then with the rest of it, we're giving back as prizes to the different players. There is a little bit of money that goes to keeping the website up and stuff like that. But basically about 90, 95% of what we bring in just goes right back to promoters and players.
It's like a player's charity with a 95% pass-through. That sounds like a pretty good program right there.
I've had people say, how come we don't make any money from it and stuff? But everybody who's in it has an organization. I mean, I have leagues with 4,000 members in them. I have 30 tournaments up and down the East Coast. And so players competing in my events are getting benefits through Volley America.
Okay, so I see you have divisions here. You have MOWO.
Well, men's open, women's open. That's all for tournaments, and that's for the Grand Prix, right?
Right. So you have total purse of $6,000 for the men's open, for instance. So all the way down to 15th, they have a chance to make $50 back.
Exactly.
If you're just getting out there and playing.
And the check comes, we send them out December 1st. I joke with the players as like a Christmas club.
That's right. Pay for your presence throughout the entire year with your volleyball performance in the summer. That sounds pretty good. Todd, you run one of the places that some of these tournaments occur at. And we know we've talked to you before on the show about some of the dealings there at Bradford Beach. And one of the things I wondered about, and we've chatted back and forth about a little bit, is about negotiations with some of the beach volleyball entities that are out there. And now we're looking at the pro level of things, of course, the NVL, Cuervo, the Wide Open, all those kinds of guys. What on earth is going on with those guys for this next season that you can tell us now? Because there's a lot of our listeners who just want to know what's happening, and a lot of these websites aren't updated in the least.
No. Well, it's great to be on. DJ Roche, Barney, thanks a lot for the opportunity. Rich and I have been working really hard the last, this goes back, I think, 3 years, which was tailing off. I think AVP Next was at a certain spot, and then things went away, and we had actually all met at AVCA last year to talk about what we're going to be doing with grassroots beach volleyball, because I think Rich and I both agree the sport is not in a bad spot at the grassroots level. There's people
right.
playing of all different skill levels and ages, and that is a very viable part of the business that largely had not been, you know, people weren't really making a real concerted effort to talking to those folks. So back to where Rich was at, yes, Volley America subscribes to those individuals no matter what skill level or if they play doubles or sixes, and the future of Volley America is really, really bright. Now, as it relates to those players that have an idea of a pipeline going from juniors through the collegiate program now or playing the open level events around the country and thinking they're going to be a professional, that pipeline, I think, is just starting now to be redeveloped with USA Volleyball and then subsequently the professional entities are out there. Now, in my opinion, only because this was my latest experience, the IMG equation by far the strongest and has all the resources to put Pro Beach Volleyball back on the map for a very long time. I think with any of these big groups out there, like an IMG, there's definitely a process that they follow in terms of getting the sponsorships and the dates and everything lined up. You and everybody should know that James Lights and that group will have that information available as soon as they're ready to release it. The other groups that are out there I have not worked with individually, but this is my own opinion. I think that there was a tremendous amount of overselling that was done to sponsors, promoters, venues about what exactly was going to be offered.
Yeah.
And then the execution of those events, I attended some of them just to see what was going on. I talked to some people that worked for the events. I talked to some people that played in them. And I think everyone largely has the same opinion that when you're saying you're a professional entity, there are an expectation level that comes with that, right or wrong. I mean, the bar has been set previously by the AVP. It's now, I think, set again by IMG. And if that bar or that mark is not being met, I don't think it's really right to call yourself a professional tour, because largely you're not a professional. The people that are playing it cannot make enough money to exist as a professional. So that's my opinion on it. I think IMG is clearly the top organization, and they're going to be around for a long time, and those are the folks that we should be trying to help.
We've talked about the Wide Open on this program. Do you feel like the Wide Open presents itself as a professional entity, or is that more almost a gray area between amateur and pro?
Well, we have similar sponsors. Spalding has been a great supporter of Volley America, and also my dealings at Bradford Beach and Rich as well with East End. You know, I have not hosted a Corona Wide Open or a Wide Open event per se. We very much wanted to host one, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. From what I see, I always feel that the little things, the way the courts are constructed, the integrity of an event, balls flying in off of another court, to me, that doesn't set a professional standard. I don't even see that at junior tournaments. So to say that you're a professional entity when one of 10 courts is a professional standard, or maybe the idea of how the event is going to be put together and released to the public, I think it sends a very confusing message when you would see a professionally run event by IMG that everything looks exactly the way you would expect. And then you go to another event and you see players officiating matches. I don't think that's professional. So,
Rich, I want to take it back to you for a second and talk about some of the growth that you've seen at the junior and adult levels. Are you seeing increased participation despite the struggles of the professional leagues?
Well, my own business at East End Volleyball is seeing growth for 35 years, pretty much. I think there's like 1 year where we didn't have growth. So yeah, I see, in general, the sport is growing just fine at the lower levels. You know, it's even growing fine at the top levels. The problem at the top levels isn't usually the organizations. It doesn't seem to work. The business model that they have, I mean, AVP had a great business model. It doesn't ever work. So, you know, maybe what Corona Wide Open or the Wide Open Series is doing might be a better one in the long run. But, yes, we see growth at all levels.
Okay, get to that point for me then, Rich. I mean, so many people playing, so many people out there, and we talk about this all the time on the show. It seems like there's a certain amount of apathy or lack of interest from all those people who participate on a regular basis and call themselves volleyball players. There's a lack of interest in viewing the top level of volleyball, and that both applies to indoor and outdoor. Do you get that feeling from your participants? Do they enjoy participating but not spectating?
You know, it's pretty strange. I have a couple stories about that. 1 year ago when we first started, and it was like in the late 80s, and Jose Cuervo was sponsoring our little amateur series here on Long Island, and they came to me and said, well, let's take all the top players in one tournament, and we'll fly them out to Redondo Beach for the Jose Cuervo World Championships of Beach Volleyball. And that seemed like the greatest prize in the world. We had some of our top teams won, and they went out there, and they barely watched any of the matches. They just wanted to play. There's something about volleyball players that don't like to watch as much, but they like to play. And then take that another level, we started running some amateur tournaments next to AVP events on the East Coast. We did it in Fort Lauderdale, and we did it in Belmar. And it was amazing how many players who came to those events who never thought they wanted to watch a pro tournament were able to play, and then in between their matches would go over and watch the pro events, and they started going every year. So there's almost a way to you have to mix the two of them together, which is sort of what the Corona Wide Open Series is trying to do.
Yeah, it seems odd to me, and it has for a long time with this sport, that I would run into people and they'd say, oh, my buddy's pretty good at volleyball. Could he come out and play on your national team? Really, dude? And it just seems pervasive in this sport, and I wonder if that's because of the lack of visibility of the true top level. And that even relates to the AVP, who has not been nearly as exposed since about 1995 as they ever have been. Obviously, there was a good bump in the early 2000s, but there hasn't been tremendous exposure there, and we've never seen great exposure for the indoor teams. We've actually seen in the last couple of years finally the most exposure they've ever had on Universal Sports and Versus and those types of places. I wonder if that's why people just don't have touch with how much better the pros are than their level at their local YMCA or at East End or wherever they happen to be.
With the beach, it's just real hard to televise it properly. You know, indoors have gotten better at televising in different angles. It's just real hard to get that game to come across on with the angles that they have on the beach right now. Go ahead, Todd.
We've actually had very good success having crowds turn out for the last 2 years. When I had the Barefoot Championships, we had a tremendous crowd come out to watch Phil and Todd and Carrie and Rachel play. And the AVP had not been on site at Bradford Beach prior to that event in 13 years. And then last year when we had the Cuervo event, you know, there was all kinds of issues with your ideas on who was coming and who was playing. And I can tell you outside of Sean and John playing, a lot of the players were largely nameless to everyone. We had 3,500 people there for the final match, and that was with no promoting. We had no time to promote that event other than through my emails, through what I handle at Bradford Beach, and then we had some local media get involved. I want to say that the path that Cuervo had taken last year with putting the athletes into town a day or two before, like Miller used to do, going to venues, running activation back and forth with the beaches, with the beach and some of the bar locations, that works. And people came out. We had grassroots events tied in around the pro event. I think if there's going to be any future in beach volleyball, there has to be a consistent schedule so that, you know, whether or not you're a hardcore volleyball player or someone that just likes to watch or hang out, whatever, you know that, all right, the third weekend in July or the second weekend in June, whatever it is, that schedule is consistent and those people know to look for it, and then the promoters or the folks on the ground can get the word out. I will say safely that plan is something that I believe is going to happen for the future, and the folks that are going to be lucky enough to host those events will be very involved in that process. So, you know, I do know from other locations around the country, there isn't always a person like Rich or myself at a beach that can take on and do those type of things with the community. And I know that those are some things that they're going to look at and try to find that local ambassador to really help, you know, bring it along. And that takes time. I mean, before it used to be, you know, AVP would show up. They didn't have somebody in town maybe, and they'd run a tournament, and, you know, there'd be people there or maybe not. So,
Todd, you make a great point, and we've talked about the lack of scheduling already available now, even just a couple of months out from what should be the beginning of the season. But we've never really talked about having an actual consistent schedule. And I understand some of the issues that folks are up against when it comes to dealing with municipalities or coastal commissions and those types of things, but it seems like places like your Bradford Beach, or I think of Cincinnati where they have a separate venue, those types of places would be better positioned to be on the hook for, okay, the third weekend in August every single year and be able to build that. I mean, that's what a Crossroads does with all the juniors tournaments. You know when that's going to happen. You can plan your life around it. You guys would have an advantage in that.
Well, the one thing, and this can kind of go to your motorsports background, Barney, is that we try to put on a show, and it's not just volleyball. It's music, it's lifestyle, it's all sorts of things. My business partner is investing nearly $500,000 in the Bradford Beach that'll be visible come the third week of May. Our plan is to become the preeminent location to host any major national or international beach volleyball event. We're going to host the national championships for juniors in July. We obviously have some plans for some other events, which I can't say publicly, but our long-range goals are to put a turnkey public beach setting in place that promoter or that series, all they're going to have to do is literally contact me or we'll contact them and say, okay, I want to have this event that day, and then we take care of everything else with the municipality, and they don't even have to worry about courts. So, I mean, it's literally everything will be set up for them. I know that that's not normal, and a lot of public beaches can't do that. We just decided that to me, is the best way to go. I've seen it be very successful for auto racing where you're out in the middle of a cornfield and there's 100,000 people sitting there. So Milwaukee, to me, why not? We're going to make it happen. We have people making the investments, and beach volleyball is a big part of the future.
This is why I like Todd. We bring him on, he starts talking about motorsports. This is my kind of volleyball guy.
You lit up when he said that.
Todd, yeah. One more question on that and the investment you guys are making. Is the goal eventually to host an FIVB tournament?
I think that, and again, I can't necessarily say publicly with the events that we have in mind, but they've been mentioned to me that the type of events that we could go after. The events that we would want to host, that Milwaukee County and our State Visitors Bureau would help me go after, would be to bring in national and international tourism to the state. And we've been working on this for some time. The first event that we have built a grant for was for the junior event this summer. That's going to be a great opportunity to bring a lot of people in. I think that from what I've understood from the FIVB events, it's a pretty serious promoter agreement that we would have to enter into. I don't know what
right.
It looks like. But I would tell you this, we'd probably be on the short list to look at it. So.
Very nice. Rich, I want to come back to you before we move on here in the program and talk about the visibility of Pro Beach. It's been high, gone, back again to some level, now gone to a large extent here in the United States. How much has that lack of visibility or increased visibility affected your growth patterns? You mentioned it's grown the entire time, but do you see spikes when the pro athletes are on TV more?
Actually, I don't. The Olympics helped some. But, you know, the sport of beach volleyball, they're playing it for the lifestyle, and it's a lot of fun, and you just get addicted to it. And the pro game, if it was going real strong and consistent, like you were saying, would certainly help, but it has been pretty inconsistent over all the years I've been running stuff. So if I could just say one thing, too, that when Todd talked about local ambassadors and stuff like that, that's where the program is growing, is all small groups and a bunch of friends getting together and starting tournaments. That's how I started 35 years ago. We were sitting on the beach with nothing to do and said, well, let's start a tournament. And that's basically what our goal at Volley America is to help these guys grow, even if they're small. I mean, we already have a website where they can do online registration through our site. when the teams sign up, they automatically get their seeding based on the points, based on their past results. All these things that I wish I could have had when I first started and we could never afford to. Basically, Volley America has this all set up, and we're willing to give new organizations instructions, basically consulting, paperwork, anything they need to get going. And all they have to do is just take Volley America memberships. It doesn't cost them anything otherwise.
So volleyamerica.com is the website, and it sounds like, Rich, if you're a tournament director wanting to get more exposure for your tournament, you should sign up. If you're a player and you want to play for some prize money, you should sign up. And also, if you're a player looking for increased places to play, you just don't know what tournaments are out there, going to volleyamerica.com would seem like a good plan.
It is. We're actually adding something to the website shortly where when you go to the front page, it's going to show a combined schedule of all the different promoters for like the next week or two. And that would be a real good thing to be checking out.
Fantastic. And over on the other side, Todd, if people want more information about your event, your place, Bradford Beach, where should they go?
They go to bradfordbeachjam.com, or they can find us on Facebook at Bradford Beach. And I would say this week they'll be seeing all the updates on the leagues and special events coming up. So it was 80 here yesterday, and it was in the mid-70s here today, and I was in Florida last week, and I guarantee you the weather was better here yesterday than it was when I was down there. So a lot of people are excited for playing volleyball and doing it at Bradford Beach.
It's been much better weather in the Midwest than it has here in the West for about the last 2 or 3 weeks, and I think it's going to continue this week. Windy and in the low 60s here. I think it's beautiful, and in the 70s all the way up to Toronto, where I'll be this next weekend. Todd Goronsky of Bradford Beach and Rich Hiles of Volley America and East End Volleyball, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate the work that you guys are doing, and it sounds like the merging of your two organizations and what you work on is kind of where the growth is going to come for the world of beach volleyball in general. Thanks very much, gentlemen.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, bye.
Very good. Rich and Todd, get out there and check out their sites. That's bradfordbeachjam.com or Bradford Beach on Facebook, and then volleyamerica.com. Check that out. Get out there. If you just want to know where to play, Volley America, boy, they have a lot of tournaments listed there. If you're an amateur player, if you're an up-and-coming player, if you're an adult player who's just joining in looking for some fun competition and good trips, that's the place to go.
I found it interesting that they said volleyball is still strong at the grassroots level.
That's true indoor, too. It's true. Hasn't meant much for the rest. But that's true. Interesting, I think, too, that Todd mentioned 3,500 for a finals. That's a good number. I'd like it to be 5 or 10. I'd like it to be 5 or 10.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, so would he. But.
Well, especially, I mean, that I remember that event. They didn't have a long time to promote that event last year.
I'm tired of that excuse. It doesn't fly.
Dead true, though. But well, it also goes to the point that I've said before, too. Like, for volleyball to be consistent, it needs to be the major cities, the major area that needs to be in Bradford Beach X weekend of X month every year. It needs to be
right
in Chicago this weekend every month, every single year.
Right.
That's the only way you're going to build consistency. And then you have a few off spots that you go to every once in a while just to try something out new. But your major cities that you get the most support from, you need to be there on a consistent basis. And now, being around beach volleyball for all those years, I know it's extremely difficult with all the permits, all the other stuff that goes into it, I get it. But that should be the goal. Because that's the only way you're, I mean, the only in any business, it has to be consistent. People have to know what to expect. And like I said, you can plan your life around that.
60 or 70,000 people or 80,000 if you're the city of Manhattan Beach, overestimating it for the purposes of scaring folks. I talked about the six-man. One of the geniuses of the six-man was just that, the consistency of date. First
yeah
weekend in August every year.
Yep.
From whenever. You know what's happened now? They moved it to the middle of the week instead of the weekend, and they don't have enough teams to run the tournament.
That's so great.
They've had to extend registration because they don't have enough teams to even run the tournament.
They want to get rid of that tournament anyway. So
dear city of Manhattan Beach,
they don't care.
Congratulations. You have ruined what was an incredible influx of tourist dollars to your city because you have a few grumpy citizens, and yes, you have a few people, more than a few people, doing things they shouldn't be doing in your city, throwing up.
Or in your front lawn.
Or
whatever.
In your front lawn. That's right. That has been happening, no doubt. But you have now killed the golden goose, and you're losing. And don't tell me about, oh, we ran a $20,000 deficit for the amount of police and protective barriers and everything else we had to put up. No, you didn't have to put that up. You decided to put that up, first of all. You decided to have the police there arresting people for jumping off of stairs onto the sand.
Yeah.
Risking their own life. They jump off there and you arrest them like they're coming in with a bomb at an airport. Okay? It's craziness that you created. It's expenses that you created. And then you claim we lost $20,000 and I call BS on your $20,000 because I know how much money they made at the bars down Manhattan Beach Boulevard alone. Forget El Sombrero. Wahoo's or whatever's right there where Johnny Rockets used to be.
Yep.
All the restaurants along that corridor, the Starbucks, the Kettle, every restaurant in Manhattan Beach, every business in Manhattan Beach, I guarantee you took in way more on those businesses than $20,000 in your city taxes. And I guarantee you wrote at least half of that number in frickin' parking tickets, people.
Oh, yeah.
With your parking police and your little chalk marks on my tire. Okay, so it's a bunch of baloney, and I'm glad you ruined it. And I hope you don't miss the income for your schools, for your public projects, for your senior citizen center that the same senior citizens that are complaining about this event like to go to and play shuffleboard, okay? Lawn bowling doesn't pay for itself, people. That's money coming out of the pockets of those young people who are coming down to drink beer on your beach and play a little volleyball. Deal with it. That tournament's dead. Take it to another city that wants the income, that wants to have fun. Maybe Long Beach, where they'll actually let you drink beer while you play. Goodbye, Manhattan Beach. The six man's going to be better elsewhere. Get your costume and head south. Or north, I don't care. Say goodbye to the snobs there in Manhattan Beach.
That's pretty good rant.
I felt good. I liked the musical accompaniment. That fired me up. I appreciate that.
Saw some veins popping out of your neck a little bit.
Hey, it's been a while since we got off on a good rant. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been another great episode of The Net Live. Much thanks to Todd Goronsky for coming on. Rich Hiles, get out there and check out their sites, BradfordBeachJam.com and VolleyAmerica.com. Get out and participate with those guys. Great sport. Beach volleyball still growing. We appreciate your participation in that. We appreciate your participation in the indoor side. And spectate Norseca coming up May 7th through the 12th. You should be there. It's going to be a great event. Just come because it's going to be great.
Tickets available.
Some fantastic volleyball, and it's cheap. $20 or $10. Take your pick. Anywhere in between. Come on down and plan on spending Saturday. We'll have more information on the VolBQ that will hopefully be happening. Still working on the permitting process, but
hopefully that
will come through. And we'll have a day of it there as we watch the men qualify for the 2012 London Games. Thanks to Brandon Rosenthal for checking in, Reed Pretty, and of course, Jay and Mike of College of Volleyball Weekly. We appreciate everything the AVCA does for us, Volleyball Magazine does for us. Check out their new site. Lots of good content coming out there. We'll be talking to those great folks this week. And DJ Roche, we'll be putting together more for Spire, who is our official sponsor of the program. SpireInstitute.org. Check them out. It's not taking a year away. It's adding a year to your career. So,
and next week we have Dr. Gervais coming on the show.
Dr. Gervais.
Talk about the mental aspects of playing volleyball. He works with a lot of high-profile, high-end athletes, so he's got a lot to say on that.
And these are techniques that you can use yourself.
Absolutely.
You can use them for work if you want, or you can use them for your weekend volleyball game.
They're not exclusive to sports.
When you're over there going through your vision segment right before the guys get the cooler beer out for a game of ace.
I so wish people could see you right now.
It's more of a tennis movement.
Yes.
I was thinking skiing, though. You always see the skiers doing their visualization. But we look forward to talking to the good doctor about that and getting into some of the mental aspects of the game. And we will continue to seek more information on the beach. I'll be in Toronto next week. For those up in Canada, Cam Kerr. Is Cam Kerr in Toronto or is he's in Montreal?
The message board, he asked if you want to grab some grub.
He's in Toronto?
If you're in Canada, can't you get to Toronto easily? Canada's not that big,
it's not that big, right?
Yeah, it's not that
big. It's only half the size of Russia or something like that. So, yeah, Cam, look me up on Facebook. Let me know. But I'll be in Toronto for the Toronto SX this week and then Houston SX the week after.
Nice.
So, program note, we will have a program next week. We will not have a program the following week because that will be spring break.
Are we going to Panama City?
We should, shouldn't we? Go to Havasu. Hold on. A Net Live from Havasu. There it is, Cam Kerr. All right, we'll talk, dude. Hey, thanks to Jeremy. Thanks to Reed. No thanks to Geeter, but hopefully soon he'll be back in the show. I'm Kevin. He's Jeremy. This is The Net Live on the Volleyball Magazine. See you next week.
Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.